Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Commander Dwayne Kilgus. I work for the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases here in Atlanta. And I want to welcome you all to the session this morning. We've got a great session. As you heard from Secretary Sebelius just a little while ago, the H1N1 response, the H1N1 program that just took place was a huge deal. And when I first came on board with the immunization program, a lot of folks kind of led me down the road that if we could get vaccine into the doctor's offices, that it would magically appear in the arms of children, adolescents, and adults alike, and that everything would be wonderful. And what I've come to realize over the last several years is that that's actually not the case, that there's a whole lot of work that has to be done around educating parents and providers and those involved about how to get access to the vaccines that they need to protect themselves, how many doses they need, how often they need to get them, and so on. And that's a huge, huge deal. It's a huge challenge. And so I don't want to speak any longer than I absolutely have to. I want to go ahead and introduce our first speaker and get him off the ground. What we'll do is we'll hold the questions until the end and make sure that everyone gets a chance to give their presentation. And if you have questions, we'll ask you to come to the mic in the middle of the room here and ask your question. That way, everything's being recorded and it'll be all be captured. So our first group that's coming to speak to us today is Brooke Nash and Denise Levis. And they're joining us from the Centers for Disease Control. Brooke is a health communications specialist with the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. And Denise is an ORIs fellow with that same group. And they've been working on a cultural competency program around communications with H1N1. And we want to have them come up and join us at the table or at the desk and present. So.
So good morning, everybody, and thank you for attending this session on communication strategies to vaccinate minority and other populations against H1N1. I'll be introducing our session on the communication work targeting children with high-risk medical conditions, and then I'll turn it over to my colleague who'll discuss the specific communication activities to reach this vulnerable population. So to give you some background, I'd like everyone to think back to this time about a year ago. And it was April 19th, 2009, that the CDC had confirmed two cases of the novel H1N1. And then just a few days after that, the US government declared a public health emergency. At this time, the CDC was also receiving an influx of questions and inquiries around children and H1N1. And by May, the Emergency Operations Center at the CDC had established a children's health team. The team's goal was to reduce the morbidity and mortality of H1N1 virus among children. Currently, the latest CDC estimates for children under the age of 18 are approximately 19 million cases of H1N1, 82,000 related hospitalizations, and approximately 1,230 deaths related to H1N1. So data is what drove our team. The September 2009 MMWR reported that from April to August 2009, 36 children under the age of 18 had died from H1N1. 19% of those children were under the age of 5, and 67% had more than one high-risk medical condition. This data is what drove our communication plan to focus heavily on reaching the gatekeepers of the children with these underlying medical conditions, putting them at high risk of flu complications. Within the communication plan, one of the objectives was to continually keep target audiences well informed of the 2009 H1N1 activities, recommendations on vaccines, treatment, and infection control for children. What actually played out in regards to this objective was a strong working relationship with the Vaccine Task Force within CDC, collaborating with them on message development, which always contained the consistent vaccine message that getting the vaccine is the single most important way to protect against the 2009 H1N1 virus. The Children's Health Team had a number of target audiences. Primarily, they included internal CDC groups, pediatricians, other pediatric healthcare providers, the general public, local and state health departments, and the parents and caregivers of these high-risk children. Major communication efforts on behalf of the Children's Health Team included defining a list of the high-risk medical conditions, sharing this list internally and externally by developing materials and disseminating this list through partners and through the media.
So I'm going to talk to you a little bit more in depth about those activities that Brooke just mentioned. The first thing that we needed to do in order to communicate with people about children with high-risk medical conditions was to define what these medical conditions were. Specifically, we wanted to create a list. Now, the ACIP had developed a list that we ended up starting with, but given the epidemiological data that we had, we wanted to refine that list a little bit further, and so we relied on partner collaboration within CDC. All of the flu experts helped us with this, as well as the American Academy of Pediatrics. And among that collaboration, we were able to come up with a list of what these high-risk medical conditions were. And you can see from this slide that there are a lot of medical conditions that we identified. And so one of the things that we really struggled with in developing this list were the balancing of needs, because we had the public health need of including as many people as possible, the clinical need of being very specific, and then, of course, the general public or the parental need. Can they look at this list and identify their child as part of it? And so we did some things here and there to kind of tweak it as we went along, but this is the ultimate list that we went with, and we're actually still using this list, and we hope to keep including it in future flu pandemics. Once we had the list established, we wanted to communicate internally among the CDC response teams. We wanted them to know not only are children important, but there are these specific high-risk medical conditions that they need to know about. And in particular, we wanted the vaccine message to be really strong among this population. And one of the things that we did is we looked through all the guidance that was out there that CDC had developed. And I'm sure a lot of you have spent time combing through some of that guidance, and there is a lot of it, and it often changed. So we had to kind of work within that paradigm and convince people that, yes, these changes are necessary. Yes, this is very important. And really using the list and our partnership as credibility to get some of the guidance changed. We worked a lot with the Vaccine Task Force, again, because the messaging was so important in order to for people to know that children, and specifically children with high-risk medical conditions, were a priority population. And kind of working within CDC and working to try to adapt guidance was a really great way just to kind of spread the word informally, as well as making the formal changes to the guidance that could then be communicated externally. Certainly, there's very complex messaging in the guidance, and so we had to navigate that when we were including the additional messaging about high-risk medical conditions. Version control is always an issue because there are a lot of versions out there, and so making sure that we were identifying all of the proper guidance and that we were changing it properly and we were identifying the most important places where changes needed to be made. And again, because so many people were requesting changes to the guidance continually, really justifying why this special population was so important to include in the revisions was a really important thing that we ended up working on. So once we worked internally and we wanted to make sure that they had the messages so that we could kind of be on the same page synergistically when we were communicating externally, we developed some materials that we could spread to our partners and that we could distribute through the website. And this really came about through partner requests, in particular state public health departments, Title V people working with children with special health care needs, wanted physical information that they could pass along to their communities about this at-risk population. And so what we did was we developed a few things. First of all, we had this brochure for parents, and unfortunately, I can't show you the whole thing because we don't have internet access in this room, but it is available on the CDC website if you'd like to take a look at it. We developed this for parents, but we distributed it a lot, primarily through our partner groups, and you can't see it here, but on the second page, we have a list of all of the high-risk medical conditions, and we gave a lot of examples to try to make it a little bit more understandable. We did a lot of bolding, bulleting, things like that to try to make this a little bit more readable. We covered a lot of issues. We talked generally about the flu, specifically about high-risk medical conditions, a lot about vaccination as well, vaccine safety. That was one of the things that we were hearing, was that people were not, parents were not sure whether or not their child who has asthma, for example, was to get these flu shots that we were encouraging. And so making sure that those safety messages were in here was very important for us. And the second thing that we did was a toolkit for pediatric subspecialists that we also distributed through partner groups and professional organizations. Pediatric subspecialists, why them? Well, they were the ones who were seeing the children with high-risk medical conditions. They were the ones who were hearing from parents, concerned parents saying, I'm not sure whether or not I should get my child who has diabetes vaccinated. What do you think? They didn't necessarily have access to the vaccine, but they were credible, and they were giving advice to parents. And so we put together this toolkit that we distributed to them, information about how to access vaccines. This was particularly important during the shortage that happened in October. Letters that they could send out to parents, encouraging them to get vaccinated and reminding them that their child was a part of this high-risk medical group. And then we have the brochure as well as some other materials that CDC had developed that they could use in the office. A couple of the challenges with these materials, we didn't have any formal audience research developed. We often like to have formal audience research before we develop a material, so we know what do people want and how do they want it and what specifically do we want to know. This was such a rapid response that we really just relied on communication with the people that we were partnered with. A lot of anecdotal evidence, and we're kind of on the back end now seeing the need to do more formal research in the event that something like this happens again. Plain language, again, is always an issue. We tried to work as best we could, but as you can see, the brochure has a ton of language in it, so trying to balance all of the information that we wanted to communicate versus making it as simple as possible. And of course, anytime CDC develops something, they have to put it through a pretty rigorous clearance process where people evaluate whether or not the material is appropriate, whether or not it's accurate, whether or not they think that it fits well with all of the other things that CDC is communicating about. And it's a really good asset to have, but it takes a couple extra weeks of back and forth. So when partners are asking for us to give them materials, it takes time, and that's part of it. So that was one of the challenges that we had to struggle with, too, was knowing the urgency of this information that needed to come out, but having some time crunches there, too. So finally, what we did was, once we kind of had all of these materials under our belt, we did some more external outreach through media and through partners. This is just a very small list of four partners that we worked with. Weekly conference calls if they wanted them, quarterly conference calls, regional conference calls. We did webinar with Easter Seals and YMCA. we flew one of our subject matter experts to conferences to talk about children with high-risk medical conditions when that request was made. We tried to do as much as we could to communicate with partners, and they were really the ones who wanted to know all of this information. We also worked with the American Academy of Pediatrics quite a bit, and this clinician outreach and communication activities, or COCA calls as we call them at CDC, was a huge asset for us. It's a mechanism whereby they get in touch with any number of different kinds of healthcare providers and host a conference call that involves basically a 45-minute lecture on any specific issue related to H1N1 and then a 15-minute interactive session at the end. We would have hundreds and hundreds of different providers participate on these calls. And we did some media as well. Again, just four quick examples of things that we did do. We tried to do the traditional route, some good housekeeping, for example, and also some social media. We did some podcasting of our own, as well as podcasting through other people. Vicki and Jen are apparently a very popular podcast out there for mothers. And so we also reached out to providers through Medscape and also Pediatric News. Basically, again, we did whatever we could to get the message out through traditional media. And I really have to say that Georgina Peacock, who was one of the team leads and the subject matter expert for our desk, was a huge asset for this team because she had kind of a dual credibility. She was a developmental pediatrician, and she was also a mother of four. So she had the expertise in the clinical information and also the expertise of being a parent. And the combination of those two things was really excellent for us to have under our belt. And of course, we would love to have done more media, and this isn't a comprehensive list, but we didn't have a lot of time given everything that we had to do, so that was probably our primary challenge with that outreach. So I'm going to hand it over to Brooke to wrap it up.
Great. Thanks, Denise. So in conclusion, responding to children specifically with high-risk medical conditions was a unique situation for CDC and those involved in the emergency response. Luckily, we had a crew of dedicated staff who quickly identified the need to reach these high-risk children. Defining the list was critical, and knowing who to reach and really helped guide the communication efforts throughout the response. Internal messaging was the foundation to the majority of the material production, and then disseminating these messages and materials through as many channels to reach as many caregivers and healthcare providers as possible to ultimately reduce the morbidity and mortality of H1N1 was the goal. And just because the H1N1 response has ended, our work continues. Our division recently was awarded a very large influx of money to conduct formative research, so that audience research that Denise was talking about among parents and healthcare providers who work with these high-risk children. So what information do they need at a time of influenza pandemics or seasonal flu? And where do they go and find their information? So we'll be researching that over the next couple of years, and stay tuned for those results. And thank you all very much for attending.